the commissioner with us of the Baltimore City Police Department, and I got to say that what do they say when you have a situation with your doctors and you're in the hospital, and there's a way about how certain they can make you feel comfortable. You don't know what they're going to do to you, but they talk to you real good. And Commissioner, you have the gift of knowing how to say what you want to say, smooth and decent. Yes, sir. I'll say that.
I appreciate it. And don't focus on what I say. Let's focus on what I do at this point. And that's what I even say to my police officers. And I say, don't focus on what's coming out of my mouth, but where we're going, and hopefully we can push the organization in the city in the right direction.
I sense that's going to happen. Before we get to these callers, which we're going to do, when you came on board, you did some reshuffling. Is that something that's still, or is that a sort of a day-by-day kind of situation?
No, what I did, anytime you go into any organization, there's a couple different philosophies. The old school commissioners or chiefs of police on the West Coast, as they're called, say that when you come into an organization, you turn everything upside down because everybody needs to be on a new footing, just like you're the new guy that's coming in. Then when you don't have a lot of leeway to make changes where an organization is expected to excel immediately, you reduce those changes. And when I came in, and this is my third police department, what I wanted to do, because I don't know everyone, I have to get to know their abilities, their skill base. And what I see in the Baltimore Police Department is we're a very young command staff, not so much young in age, but young in tenure. So I don't have a lot of people that have been in their position for a long amount of time. What that brings into account is that we're going to make mistakes, not because they can't get the job done and they're not talented. It's just when you're new at anything, you have to give the room for people to fall down, skin their knees to get up, and that's how we learn. That's the cognitive process. But here, also when I take over, I'm following Fred Bielfeld, who had a homicide rate of 197. And I have a mayor who made it really clear to me as I was testing my job. She wants to get lower than that, and she wants to make the city safe. So I don't have a lot of leeway to make a whole lot of mistakes. So I had to identify in a short amount of time people who had talent that I saw, put them in positions that I needed them, get the organization back on the road, moving even faster than it did before. But what I probably will do, as the longer that I'm here and I get even a better feel for employees that are here, I may make some more changes to put people in other positions.
Very well. Let's go to the chat room, and again, 60 seconds or less, starting with you, John. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the police commissioner being on the radio.
Good morning, John.
So my question is, why did you request to have a firm be hired to tell you how to run the police force at a cost of $285,000? That's a waste of taxpayers' money. You was hired for that reason. You should not bring your best friend in.
John, I thank you for the great questioning, and allow me to respond to that, because what you're picking up is what is written in the newspaper. I'm not bringing a company in to tell me what to do. I think I have a pretty good grasp on where I want to go. The issue is that anytime you take over a corporation, and that's just not a police department or a corporation, you have to have a business plan. And what that business plan does is one, give you a diagnostic of the problems within your organization, and we have some challenges that are there. We write it down to let the community know where we're going, what I'm doing, and how to hold me accountable. Bill Bratton is one of the multiple companies that is coming in under this contract. What his company is going to do is focus on our computerized statistics on how we do CompStat. That's what we call it, CompStat, to see how we do it, if we're doing it correctly, and give us some advice on how to do it better. We have another company under that same contract that's looking at strategic planning. What this police department needs to do is to make sure that we have a plan that goes out 3 to 5 years, how we do community policing and how we grow. And after we conclude all of this, and then another piece of it is efficiencies. I think our police organization right now can be more efficient than what it is. Our smallest geographic areas, which are called posts, where we put police officers, are off balance. So what that means is we have too many officers in areas where we don't need them. We don't have enough officers in other areas where we do need them. How we deploy officers to crime is on a very straight line, when it should ebb and flow like crime does, and we should have officers here. So these are all the pieces and the processes that we're bringing to the table to do a business plan, which is a very sophisticated process that you can hold me accountable for, that you that I tie my budget to, and that you know where we're going in the next 3 to 5 years. So I'm not having people come in and tell me what to do. We're building something that is sophisticated in what corporations do.
Fred, this is 913. Fred, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having the commissioner on our commissioner, ask a question. How many of your command staff live in Baltimore City?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to it, but I would probably guess there's a number who don't live in the city. And the thing that I did when I came in is I started asking people how many people were born and raised in the city of Baltimore. And the majority of the hands in the police department go up. And you know people are from Baltimore because they started discussing what high school they went to. And then you get in a fight over if Dunbar is the best high school of football or is it Poly, and you go on from there Digital Harbor. So let me answer real quick. So what I see is there's a vast majority of people in the department that were born and raised in the city of Baltimore. What does happen or what is happening is that they get to a certain level within the organization and they have moved out. That is true, and I won't deny that point.
What do you think if you can get these people to move back into the communities that they want to serve, you think that would serve the community, would be a big step in the right direction of serving the community?
Yes and no. I don't think it's so much where the person lives, it's what they do within the city. And I don't so much think it's the color of the skin of a police officer, it's what they do. Because you can have Caucasian officers that give their all to a city, and you can have Caucasian officers who don't treat a community well, and you can have the same thing with African-American officers too at the same time. It's what that officer does, their behavior, do they give their all? What I can say, although you may have command staff who do not live in the city, they spend a tremendous amount of time working in this city. They get called out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. When I go out there, they're out there. I know they're working on weekends because I see them out there on weekends. I know when they get calls, they may be at dinner with their wives or kids or at the movies. They come in. So whether they live in the city or not is not the critical point for me, is how they serve this city and how they give. But it would be nice to be able to say that 100% of command staff does live in the city of Baltimore.
Patrick's 15, 915. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for having the commissioner, and thank you for coming on. I've seen you in public. You are a gregarious, affable man. You're likable, and my concern is that it's not rubbing off on your officers. We had an incident at Coppin State where a woman came out of her classroom and found a crackhead breaking in her car. She screamed for help, and some of the males ran to help her and to try to catch the guy. The police pulled up. The white officers, some of them, were really nice and stuff, but this black officer pulled up. He made all those students that from Coppin get down on the ground, humiliated them. Then he started pushing. My buddy was there with a camera. He started pushing him and telling him to get back, and we had already moved back to the level that the officer before him had told us was okay. This officer continued to push, and then he said on camera, "Report me." Gave us his name, where he was from, and continued to push and tried to push my buddy down with the camera. We called internal affairs and lodged a complaint. That was in January. We have not heard one thing from internal affairs about this. We offered to send them a video. We have not heard anything. Who protects us from the police, sir? That is my question.
Well, I'd like to get to the point, and I heard everything you said, and I'm listening. I'd like to get to the point where we are the protectors and that you don't need protection from us as a whole, which tells me that we do not have the connection with the community. What I would like is if you stay on the air, and I hope we haven't lost you, and I have to give your name and number because my staff will follow up on that situation. I would like to know who that officer is. I'd like to know what the circumstances are, and I take what you say as truth, but I like to also hear from the opposite side to see what they were doing, what was going on in their head, and what's going on in their perception. And what you said is two things when we were talking to the coach earlier is, number one, and I just said this, it doesn't matter what the nationality, ethnicity of that police officer, if they're not doing the right thing, I think that's a critical piece. We're here to serve the community. We're here to give you service. And when we walk away, hopefully you said, wow, I was very impressed by what that police officer did. We're not going to cure these issues overnight. They didn't happen overnight, but we are starting to move in the right direction. I have some national experts that are coming in who are going to start training on impartial policing, which is basically racial profiling and how we move away from any circumstances or behaviors that may lead us that direction. I am trying to construct a curriculum that deals with community policing, so we're seen as community builders and not people who alienate our community, and you have the statements that you're telling us now. Another piece that I have is the professional standards, where I will not tolerate police officers in misconduct. I've brought in a new guy to really drive our professional standards unit where internal affairs is housed. I will assure you that we will get your information. I will assure you that we will investigate those circumstances. I would further assure you that if we had done something that is wrong out there, we will address it. But at the same time, if we did something right and a police officer wasn't correct in their actions, I will also let you know that.
Commissioner, the gentleman, Patrick, is one of the customized regulars that we have here on Radio 1, so we can get you the information.
Absolutely.
And Patrick, I'll make sure the commissioner's staff person gets the appropriate number for you. If that's all right, you call, let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to give them your number. Very good. Okay, let's continue with Arthur. Arthur, it's 19 after 9. Come on in.
Okay, good morning, Senator and Coach, and thank you, Commissioner, for being on with us, giving us this information.
Thank you, sir.
But you were speaking earlier, and you were talking about your police officers getting out of their cars and speaking to the mothers and the grandmothers. Is that your mindset to speak to them? What about the men? You know, you didn't mention anything about the men. Are you just going to lock them up? You know, there are men in the community, too. You know, you should be I would suggest, I don't know whether that's a Freudian slip or something, but, you know, it just concerned me that you just spoke of speaking to the women. You know, you got to speak to the men, too. There are men in the neighborhood that, you know, you should be developing a rapport with, I would think.
You're absolutely right, and forgive my metaphoric reference. I was just using women as example, but I meant the community as a whole, and not just the women. And probably more so myself being an African-American male and having two African-American sons who also have to make their way in the world. I think it's critical for us to engage and touch the young males in this community. I think it's more than critical. I have mentored many kids over my career, my 32 years of in my career, and I want our police officers engaging, touching, and mentoring on a lot of different levels. If I can get our police interactions away from engaging in having to take people to jail all the time, sometimes that's what we have to do, but being more of the baseball coaches at the Little League, or being at the police athletic program, or when it becomes Officer Tony and not that police officer who's taking me off to jail.
Frank, it's 921. Good morning.
Yeah, there's so many different types of criminals. You got the drug addicts that ain't got jobs, that got to steal to get drugs. You got drug dealers that ain't got jobs, that got to sell drugs to get money. I mean, you got the knuckleheads that can't handle their alcohol. But the worst ones are the violent criminals. And when police risk their lives arresting these violent criminals, the jails keep letting them out. I mean, if you look at some of their records, they've been arrested so many times for handgun violations, it's just ridiculous. It's like, what's the point of even locking them up? They'll be out over the weekend.
I think you're absolutely correct, and it's not that the system is just throwing people out. I hear my police officers, they're sharing with me some of their perceptions of the criminal justice systems, and they talk about the fact that when they arrest people, that the judges and the systems, the same thing, they don't keep them in. Reality, compared to Baltimore City to Baltimore County, the offenses are higher. You get more jail time. It's because the demand is different between Baltimore City and Baltimore County. We have a number of people in our system, and the system is just overwhelmed. And so as the system is overwhelmed, all parts of the systems look for a way to ferret or to release pressure on the system as a whole. But I don't think our solution all the time is going to be arrest. There's certain times, and I'm very strong on law and order, period, bottom line, and you're going to hear that come out a little bit more in me and some of the answers that I give. But I think solutions to the problem may be a little different, and we need to look at other solutions to problems and look at the causative factors, not just the symptomology, which you may have a drug dealer that's out there, but what's the causative factor? And when you start looking at that particular drug user, excuse me, or drug dealer, you see that the family has been involved in criminality for four generations. And so if you don't start identifying those families, if you don't start wrapping around those kids, you're going to have multiple generations going up the same pipe. And so that's what we're starting to do as an organization, is look at not symptomologies, but the causative effects, and be a little smarter about how we solve crime.
Very well. BJ, it's 923 here on 1010. Good morning.
Hello, Commissioner. This is BJ. I'd like to know, after a hard day's work, which do you think is better, Kincaid's or Everett and Jones in Oakland, or out in a harbor when you go to get spare ribs?
Well, I'd like to, I can't make a comment on that right now because I haven't been to all those locations, but if you give me the addresses, locations, I will certainly do that, and when I come back with LY over the next couple months, I'll give you my answer to that.
924 here on 1010. Aaron, you're in the chat room. Good morning. Aaron. All right, let's go to Leon. Leon, it's 924 here on 1010. Good morning. Leon? JJ, what's up? What's going on over there? Okay, let's try Ruth. Ruth.
Good morning, Senator. Good morning, Ruth. Coach. And welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, ma'am.
Welcome to Baltimore, and I wish you all the success in the world.
Yes, ma'am.
My concern is that the police officers, and I can't generalize and say all, but I'm hoping they get more sensitivity training. I have a problem with the officers, many of them, more often than not being able to distinguish law-abiding citizens from troublemakers. Personally, there have been occasions when I have been out with my husband, particularly at night, that I have been afraid, because we have been stopped. On one particular occasion, we were coming from a fabulous affair, and all of a sudden, the car in front stopped suddenly, and this plainclothes officer jumps out, and immediately my husband says to me, "Make no sudden moves. Do not say anything. Yes, officer, no, officer." Well, I began to pray. I didn't have time to do anything else or think about anything else. And so my husband put his hands on the steering wheel. And before the officer got back, he pushed the button down to put the window down. And the officer, my husband says, "May I help you, officer?" And the officer, out of his mouth comes the GD word. "Turn your GD lights down. You're blinding my A," and all this crap. I was mortified. And I know, unless he was mentally retarded or had no education at all, he should have been able to look at us. I know you can't judge a book by its cover, but sometimes things are just what I call common sense. All I'm asking you, Commissioner, is that a lot of our citizens do go through things that are unnecessary. Could they get more sensitive training? And I'm tired of seeing every black man I see that the police pulls over, he throws them on the ground, on their belly. And sometimes that is not necessary.
Agreed. I hear what you're saying, and more so than me responding is listening to what you're saying. And you're not the first person who's made that comment. I've heard that from other communities. I've heard that from other political leaders. And so that's what we're going to have to start focusing on, not just the sensitivity, but how we do the job in a very safe manner and keeping the dignity of our residents in our community while keeping police officers safe. And we can find ways to make that happen. Other organizations are doing that. But what I have to say is, even when I talk to my young sons who are 25 and 24, and even my daughter who's 30, is that there are certain ways that you should conduct yourself when being stopped by police officers, because on the other side, there's an opposite side to that, and not validating his conduct or statements that were made, because I think those are unprofessional, and that's not the way that I want police officers to act when we interact with residents, and even when we act with consumers of our product, which are suspects. There's a professional standard that I will expect and will push for. But when I tell my young sons, if they're stopped by police, what I expect them to do is to pull over, to turn on the dome light inside the car so the police officers can see everything, roll down all the windows so the officers can see inside and put their hands on the steering wheel, and don't make any movements or jerks unless the officer directs them, and then lets the officer know. And why I say that is, as a young police officer, when I was doing car stops and when I walked up to a car, I didn't know who was inside that car. Now, the people inside know that they're good people. I don't have a crystal ball. I have no idea who's inside that car. And so what I want is control of their hands, because what I was taught in the academy is that the hands can kill you. So you have to ask people to get their hands out of their pockets, get their hands out of their coats, get their hands from under a car seat. So it becomes very critical that when an officer walks up, that you don't do any sudden movements and allow them to direct. And these are things that I teach my own kids. And what I'm trying, and the reason that I'm saying that, not justifying that officer's conduct that day, is that there's two sides to this equation. Number one, the side of the resident and what they see in their perception, and then the second side is educating the community what an officer is trying to do and why the officer is taking the steps that he or she is doing.
Commissioner, Coach, I'm sorry, the clock's on me here, and I want to get this in. The police are going to turn to clergy to connect with the communities and prevent crime. I was encouraged by that. I want to share that with you, and then I'll have to be your final response within the time limitation we agreed to.
I'll be short. In the two previous cities that I've been at, the clergy has been the foundational building block that I have utilized. When I came here, I ran into newly promoted Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell, who was a major in the Eastern, and he happens to also be an associate pastor. And he and I connected because he had used a clergy in the Eastern. That goes along with the philosophy that I had used in the two previous cities that I work with. You have a built-in constituency there. You have a built-in leadership base that's there. And so that's where we're starting. We're not going to limit just the clergy, but the clergy is a large part. But I need to have all parts of the community that comes out and invest in our community to redirect and start building relationships with the police officers.
Commissioner, thank you very much. Hopefully, we'll work out a situation where this could be one of your bases to reach out to the community once a month and have a conversation with the commissioner.
I'd love to.
But don't
get
so good that you might want to come over on this side, you know.
Oh, no, sir. I'm not going to do that. It's not going to happen.
Thank you very much for coming in. I hope you're nothing but the very best. And
thank you,
to the extent that you find ways in which we can be helpful from the WLB family to help your job, make it easier, let us know.
Well, I think your invitation is, I will take it up. I may not be able to do every month, but every other month is good. But the biggest thing for being here is to listen to your constituency and hear the residents who pay my salary and to give them the product that they deserve and the police department that they deserve.
Commissioner, the best to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, sir.
And safe one. 9:30 here on 1010 WOLB.